What is Peace Brain? Peace Brain is the synergistic connection between our mental and emotional bodies, blending the electrical power of the mind with the magnetic force of the heart. Listen and explore how to create unity worldwide as we blend science and metaphysics and open our hearts and minds to the possibilities of peace on Earth and create the life we are each destined for. Featured guests range from angel communicators to zoologists and everything in between. Now here is your host, Dr. Gail Lash.
Hello and welcome. This is your host, Dr. Gail Lash, and we're so happy to have you here. This is the Peace Brain Show, and we're happy that you've tuned in to BBS Radio today. Today, we are going to have an amazing show. I have a guest here, Jonathan Jennings from Health in Harmony, and we're going to be talking about how to create a healthy planet by helping to create healthy people. And of course, please stay tuned to the end of the show, and we'll have a transformative Peace Brain meditation. So, as first as always, I open the show with a quote, and this quote is from Chief Seattle. And it says, he said, "We have not woven the web of life. Our great spirit and Mother Earth have done it all. But we are but one thread within it. Whatever we do to the web, we do to ourselves. Therefore, do good things. All things are bound together. All things connect." So I like the way Chief Seattle has put this, that we are all bound together. We're all connected. And so whatever we do to this web of life, we do to our earth, we're also doing to ourselves. And this is what we're going to be talking about today on the show, that all humans are here to really remember that we're part of this earth and that our economy, our civilization, our societies are all connected to the earth. And we are connected to each other, so we can't forget that we need to support the whole human race, that we need to support each other in order to have a healthy planet. So today I have a guest that is really all about this, and I'm very excited to introduce Jonathan Jennings, who is the Executive Director of Health in Harmony. And let me read you his bio. Jonathan has found his passion for managing international development projects early in his career. After completing his MS in conservation biology and applied ecology, he spent several years in post-conflict Kosovo and then Croatia working with local NGOs and consulting for Mercy Corps. He later joined Save the Children in the UK and earned his MA in international politics and security at Bradford University. In 2005, he joined Doctors Without Borders and spent nearly a decade managing medical humanitarian programs in southern Sudan, Ethiopia, India, Democratic Republic of Congo, Uganda, Liberia, and elsewhere. In 2013, he became the Deputy Executive Director of Doctors Without Borders, Canada, and settled in Toronto. And after more than 15 years in international aid, he decided to get back to where his passion was, for environmental science, and he joined Health in Harmony in 2017. He is incredibly excited about being part of the Health in Harmony team as its mission merges his two passions, global health and conservation biology. Jonathan believes that we no longer live in a world where the health of people, ecosystems, and the planet can effectively be addressed in silos, that human development and ecosystem conservation are one and the same. As executive director, he oversees the representational, operational, and financial health of this uniquely ambitious nonprofit organization. And you can find out more about Health in Harmony at healthinharmony.org. That's healthinharmony.org. And Health in Harmony's vision is healthy planet with healthy people, and their mission is community-led solutions for health, human health, and planetary health. Welcome, Jonathan, to the Peace Brain Show.
Gail, thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me, and I'm thrilled to be on the Peace Brain Show.
Oh, happy to have you here. It's exciting. So let me tell you, it was very interesting when I went to the annual Zoo Conference in September, back in September last month in Seattle, and your organization was there. It was at the AZA, and I loved because I ran up against, was talking to Trina and some other people there, and found out that it all began with orangutans. And orangutans are a very favorite animal of mine because I used to be a zookeeper at the Los Angeles Zoo taking care of the orangs. And we both have red hair, by the way, but, you know, that's an aside. But I understand that the plight of orangutans was really what helped create the organization Health and Harmony, correct? And could you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. So about 20 years ago, our founder, Dr. Kenry Webb, was an aspiring conservation biologist studying and tracking orangutans in Borneo. Now, the island of Borneo, which is in the Indonesian archipelago, the island of Borneo, for the past 30 or 40 years, has been experiencing the fastest rate of deforestation that the world has ever known. So Kenry, as a young conservation biology student, was tracking orangutans and studying orangutan behavior and habitat. And one day, her Indonesian assistant cut himself with a machete. And when he did this, he absolutely panicked. He really freaked out. And Kenry was surprised and asked him why. And the reason he was so panicking after he had, you know, a pretty significant wound from the machete on his arm, I believe, is because, number one, there was no hospital or medical clinic nearby. Number two, the transport to the clinic was going to cost him more than he can afford. And number three, the only way that he was going to be able to afford the transport to the clinic and then the cost of the medical care once he got there was to cut down rainforest trees. Okay? Now, can you imagine then the penny that dropped in Kennery's mind here? Explored this further and found out that actually most of these communities were cutting down enormous rainforest trees to be able to pay for their health care.
Wow.
And that's when the penny dropped with her. And so Kenry then put herself through medical school at Yale School of Medicine and then founded Health and Harmony, which we're going to talk more about today.
Oh, my goodness. That is amazing, and what an unfortunate and yet very fortunate accident that happened to bring that awareness into light. So I know your background is with both conservation and with Doctors Without Borders. What drew you to come to Health and Harmony and move from Doctors Without Borders to Health and Harmony?
Yeah. A lot of people ask me that question. As you said in your intro, I joined Health and Harmony last year, and before that had spent about 15 years with Doctors Without Borders, Médecins Sans Frontières, all around the world, and then most recently in Toronto. And you know, so what compelled me to leave this amazing organization, this humanitarian aid work, for this new field of planetary health, which Health and Harmony is working inside of? And I always bring up three of the last humanitarian crises that I was involved with while at Doctors Without Borders, and the fact that each one was directly or indirectly driven by environmental degradation, by global warming and climate change. And these three are, you know, post-drought famine in the Horn of Africa, the outbreak in West Africa after the Ebola virus traveled 4,000 kilometers west, thanks in part to deforestation and other climate effects. And then the third humanitarian crisis is the Syrian conflict, which is still ongoing, unfortunately and sadly, and was prompted at least in part by drought-inspired urbanization, which pushed rural agriculturalists into the cities and stressed already delicate interethnic relations in that country. So really, I felt like I was waking up every morning, Gail, reacting to the humanitarian fallout of a sick planet, and today it's more than it's more than human health and dignity that are at stake. Biological life as we know it is really at risk of disappearing or becoming unrecognizably altered. I honestly feel like both emotionally and intellectually that the current trajectory of our planet's health is an emergency. So I decided that the planet was the patient that I needed to work to resuscitate, to alleviate its suffering and to restore its dignity. When I left Doctors Without Borders, I told my family and my colleagues there that today I feel like the most vital humanitarian aid work I can do is work that helps ensure that children and people everywhere on the planet have a planet that they can live on.
Well, and interestingly enough, you know, as you say you're working for a healthy planet, I mean, ironically, or it brings you back to human health, just as you just said, that when we can get the human health or the resources for humans available to those who are in these sensitive environmental areas, which I guess is most of the planet these days, you know, then you're going to, quote, save the planet, correct?
Right. You know, your opening could not have been better. It could not have been more apt, Chief Seattle's comments. Really what Health and Harmony is doing today is, to use a bit of jargon here, we're operationalizing that interconnectedness, right? So Health and Harmony, you know, we're a 10-year-old planetary health organization that understands what Chief Seattle was meaning, and that's that human development and environmental conservation are one and the same. Now, I've been part of the international development industry for most of my career, and I think, you know, the international development industry and the international conservation industry, I think it's very fair to say that they're struggling to deliver lasting impact to communities and to habitats and ecosystems during the last 3 or 4 decades. And I think that's at least in part because the health and well-being of people, of wildlife, and of ecosystems in the planet can't be addressed effectively inside of the silos that these industries are typically addressing these complicated issues through.
So as a human being, I know that we tend to compartmentalize things, you know, and particularly in our scientific endeavors, we focus on a particular species or particular habitat, a particular issue, and do scientific research around it. What you're putting forth with Health and Harmony is let's look at the big picture. Let's look at the broader scope and let's address all of those issues in one bite, if you will, or together as one. That's hard. How do you get, first of all, funding for that? How do you get buy-in for that, you know, if you don't have a specific goal, if you will, in mind?
Yeah. Well, these are all great questions. And the funding question is something that I have half the answer to. And if you have the other half, then let's talk later. But you're right. I mean, you're right. The ecological fact here is that our health is intimately linked across the nexus. So that's more jargon. But what that means is the health of humans, the health of orangutans, ecosystem health or integrity, and then planetary health or atmospheric health, it's all one. It's all linked. And I don't mean metaphysically or spiritually. I mean ecologically, scientifically, and practically. And so that's, you know, at Health and Harmony, we believe that global health for all depends on linking human health and well-being and ecosystem protection at the local level. And the way we go about doing that is somewhat unique within the industry. We work inside rainforest ecosystems of high conservation value, like the ecosystems and rainforests of Borneo, where the barriers to human health and well-being are driving ecosystem degradation. And I gave you, you know, pretty explicit and clear example of how barriers to human health and well-being, such that was experienced by Kennery's colleague in Indonesia some 20 years ago, drives ecosystem destruction. What we are learning is that in Borneo, in Madagascar, in Brazil, in a lot of high conservation value rainforests, people's effort to secure their immediate well-being the health of their child, the health of their wife or aunt or brother or sister or even themselves is causing them to do the unthinkable because they simply don't have any other choices. They have no choice. The only way that this colleague of Kennery's could raise the money to be able to afford the transport and the care at the hospital, transport to the hospital, and then the medical attention at the hospital was to log the rainforest. And today
we're
seeing this, you know, in many parts of the world, and we're focused on rainforest ecosystems in Indonesia, Madagascar, and Brazil.
So let's talk about that for a minute. You know, what's missing? You obviously were part of Doctors Without Borders, and that's part of their mission is to go around the world where there are no doctors and administer health care. Is it that there's just not enough clinics, there's not enough resources, there's not enough hospitals being built, the roads are bad, you know, all of the above? What could be done on the ground to give better access to health care?
Yeah, great question. And let me just be very clear that Doctors Without Borders, they are a humanitarian organization. And the humanitarian objective is very clear and it's very simple. And it's to save lives, alleviate suffering, and restore human dignity. Now, their mandate is not, let's say, it's not to promote ecosystem integrity. One of the reasons I felt like I needed to transition my career was because this is something that's missing. In fact, the three examples I gave you that sort of humanitarian crises that prompted my transition, so famine in the Horn of Africa, Ebola virus,
right,
and the Syrian conflict, these are all examples of how humanitarian need is being created by a sick planet, by unhealthy ecosystems, right? So what's missing, I think, is the silo busting, the silo breaking that's needed within the human development and conservation development industries. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not critiquing. There are amazing organizations out there doing some amazing work. But I think that the trajectory of our planet is, you know, when we talk about climate change, et cetera, there was a recent report by the IPCC, the International Panel of Climate Change, last year that said, you know, it's a bit alarming. It says we have, you know, mere decades to get this right before the climate changes to the point where it becomes uninhabitable for a lot of people and a lot of biodiversity on the planet. So what's missing, to get back to your question, I think is really the ethos that Health and Harmony brings. It's this readiness to understand that human health, ecosystem integrity, ecosystem health, and planetary health, number one, are linked. And number two, it's a readiness not to work in silos. It's a readiness to accept complexity. It's a readiness to be humble in the face of complexity. And it's a readiness to ask communities, and this is very important, to ask communities what they think are the solutions to, for example, stopping the causes of ecosystem degradation. So we ask communities to design solutions to the complex problems. We don't approach those problems within the sectors of water and sanitation or health or education. We know that humans don't experience it. Gail, you don't. I don't. We don't experience
right.
our challenges in silos, in stovepipes. So I really think that
right.
that's what's missing is the ability and the readiness to have local communities, indigenous communities, design solutions that are going to be very complex. And, you know, often donors shy away from complexity.
Oh, my goodness. What an interesting statement. So give us a story or give us an example of one of the complex solutions that a community has come up with.
Okay. Well, let's go back to Borneo. So Kennery, as I said, mm-hmm. Has this experience, puts herself through Yale School of Medicine, and founds Health in Harmony, and then goes back to Borneo and practices what she has called and what Health in Harmony now calls the process of radical listening. So around one national park in Borneo, a 100,000 hectare national park in Borneo, and I think that's approximately 200,000 acres, She and her Indonesian colleagues go to 40 villages. This is in 2007. And they spend 400 hours listening to these villagers and these communities talk about the drivers of rainforest degradation and how these communities can eliminate those drivers of ecosystem degradation. So what Kinry did is she asked the community, she said, look, you are the stewards of this precious rainforest that is a lung of the planet, that is so valuable to communities all over the planet. What could the rest of the world do to thank you for stewarding this ecosystem? What might be required for you to stop logging this national park? And the communities came to consensus around the solution. This is 40 communities. This is hundreds of hours of radical listening. The communities told Kinry, we can stop illegally logging this national park if we have access to affordable quality medicine, medical care, and we have training in alternative livelihoods. If we have training in how to become organic farmers or how to start small businesses. Okay, so that's an example of local design of a what is a very complex intervention, right? I mean, this is not simple to create access to affordable quality healthcare and training in alternative livelihoods such as organic farming. So to her credit, Kinry built Health and Harmony and initiated another organization in Indonesia, which after 10 years since 2007 has made some incredible impact on the lives of these 40 communities, but also on ecosystem integrity. So our work with these 40 communities in the past 10 years has created an 88% reduction in the number of households that are participating in illegal logging. We have contributed to a 90% decrease in child mortality, so that's the mortality associated with children under the age of five. We have seen a stabilization of the loss of primary rainforest, and we have seen roughly 20,000 hectares of secondary growth. So this rainforest is regenerating, it's regrowing. And to get back to your love of orangutans, Gail, there are approximately 2,500 individuals of the Bornean orangutan, which is an endangered species, living in Gunung Palu National Park. That's the national park that these 40 communities live around. These are the communities that Health and Harmony has been working with for the last 10 years. So we're protecting habitat, precious and crucial habitat for these orangutans, but also thousands of others species of plants and animals.
Yes, of course. No, the orangs are one of the apex. You know, you've got all the thousands of insects and birds and all the other animals in the same rainforest. Exactly. So this is working fantastically in this particular national park and with these families, these communities. A couple of questions here. How does the government react to this? Or are they taking it as a model? Are there other NGOs working with Health and Harmony to duplicate this at other places? Or what's the outside viewpoint, I guess, is my point question here.
Yeah. Good question. So local government is very, very supportive. And by local government, I mean the Department of Health, the National Park System, the local mayor are very supportive of the work that we're doing with these communities and very appreciative of this unique way. And let me be very, very clear about this. We don't have this success at all without the support of the Indonesian authorities. So this is really a feather in the cap of Indonesia. We are promoting the success in Jakarta more centrally within the Ministry of Health during the last year. We've brought awareness to this success and to this program in Jakarta, and we're trying to influence, I don't want to be too big for my britches here, but my Indonesian colleagues are really trying to influence policy, right?
Yes.
We, and So I describe this, and we describe this as a planetary health approach, and that's because we are fundamentally, we can talk about the definition of planetary health in a second, but we are improving the health of people and the health of the natural systems on which people's health depends. We're improving the health outcomes of individuals, and we're improving ecosystem integrity. That's very important. That is a feather in the cap of Indonesia. And so the next question about our model or our unique way of approaching human development conservation as one and the same, very, very apt use of the word model, Gail. That's how we see this. We're working with researchers at Stanford right now to really distill the fundamental elements of what is making our approach work. And we have done field assessments, feasibility assessments in Madagascar, in the Philippines. We're preparing a feasibility assessment in the Brazilian Amazon for early next year. We very much believe in our approach, but we are also data-driven. We want to know if the same approach can be effective across contexts, with different communities, with different environmental, health, and political realities. So we very much want to introduce our way of working in Madagascar and in Brazil. And to your question, we have just last month, we have initiated our first replication site, still in Borneo, still in Indonesia, but at another national park. And it's another national park where it's the same story, Gail. The people have no choice but to log the forest in order to access and pay for healthcare. So we are really trying to take a scientific data-driven approach to proving the efficaciousness or the effectiveness of our model, but then working with local partners, working with local NGOs, like we're developing strategic partnerships with local partners in Madagascar, and we're doing the same in Brazil, because we absolutely believe that we can bring the same value to these communities across rainforest ecosystems. And we also believe that if we are on to something special, we absolutely have a responsibility to each other and to the planet to understand the limits of our potential. And we can talk a little bit about planetary health if you wish, and I can go deeper into that if you desire.
Okay. For anyone just tuning in, we're talking with Jonathan Jennings, who is the Executive Director of Health in Harmony. And you can find out more about that organization at healthinharmony.org is the website. Jonathan, a couple things come to mind when you mention this. And one is my master's and doctoral studies was in Belize in Central America, asking residents of a riverine ecosystem whether they were benefiting from tourism dollars coming in or what their benefits were, because it used to be just helping out the howler monkeys and the riverine system, educational value, and then it turned into monetary value from tourism. But asking people in seven villages what they were, whether it was worth their efforts to save the forest, if you will. And there was a lot of disparity in benefits, which it started out as pretty equal when this community sanctuary was created, the community baboon sanctuary. But then as the years rolled on, it got very unequal, for some people were benefiting from monetarily from tourism and others were not. So the incentives for keeping the rainforest was, or the riverine system was going away. So I'm wondering how, along those same lines in Borneo or what you're starting in Madagascar or Brazil, are you finding this disparity of benefits? In other words, if people want obviously access to training and other livelihoods or medical care, are they feeling, is everyone in the village or the area feeling those results?
Yeah,
or not?
Good question. And that you know, for those of us familiar with the international development, human development, that's often a critique of development programs. And one of the things that Kenry and I absolutely believe in is not only proximity to the communities that we're working with, but also a readiness to accompany them until they tell us to leave. Right?
Now, okay, you're right.
And this is I think this is somewhat, in some people's ears it will sound totally unrealistic. In my ears it's disruptive. I believe this is the way that we need to go as a global community. I can only tell you that after 10 years of our work with these communities, we conducted more radical listening exercises to develop our strategic plan for the next 5 years. Okay, and one of the things that the communities told us, now remember 10 years ago in 2007, the communities were telling us in order to stop logging, they needed access to affordable quality health care, and they needed training in organic farming and other alternative livelihoods, alternatives to logging. What they told us now in 2017 when we did more radical listening exercises with these communities is that they wanted to reforest. They didn't mention the basic needs that they had mentioned 10 years before. They mentioned reforestation, but they mentioned reforestation not for purely altruistic reasons, and I find this perfectly acceptable and understandable and reasonable. They understand that a healthy forest through the harvesting of non-timber products puts food on their table, puts money in their accounts to send their kids to school, right? And they understand that a healthy rainforest is a lung of the planet. It's pulling carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. It's regulating climate not only locally, but regionally and internationally. And so they not only do they have the incentive, they own this. And they use the Indonesian word, which I don't know, but the Indonesian word they used is, they told our colleagues and they told Kenry that, you know, quote, we are pathfinders. And so that, and I want to be very clear and open and honest, Gail, we have a lot of challenges and a lot of problems, okay? There are warts in everything we do. We are not perfect, and we are a long way from perfect. But I'm highlighting these positives because in my, you know, roughly 15, 20 years doing this kind of work, it's really astounding to be able to see a community not lose their incentive to maintain these programs, but their behavior has changed to the extent that they now see the economic, health, and social advantage, not to mention also the ecological advantage, in reforestation.
Yes. Excellent. No, that's huge. I mean, that's huge. And so I'm going to steer us a little off, but not really. So certainly the people who live there in that rainforest, that's they're connected to the land, and they now see this interconnection. How do we get people in, where I am in Atlanta, you know, the kids in the School of Atlanta, or the you're up in Seattle or Portland, you know, that in those communities, or adults, not just children, to understand that connection?
Yeah.
That's a huge question, I know.
It is. And I'm going to come at this from a couple of different altitudes. The first is I want to be very clear about something. I mentioned in 2007 when Kenry and her Indonesian colleagues conducted, you know, over 400 hours of radical listening exercises with these communities. They told her then, and this was without a doubt, they said, look, we know this rainforest is responsible for our clean air, our clean water, and our disease profiles. Now, they didn't use those words, but the point is they knew the importance of that rainforest ecosystem to their ability to grow rice effectively, to their ability to stay healthy, right? So my point is most of the peoples on the planet, I think, do feel the connection. I would just hypothesize that it's external challenges that force us into behavioral decisions that cause us to degrade that ecosystem or to degrade our local environment. And I think that's true in Indonesia, North America, in Asia, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's one thing. The second, you know, the question about how do we influence the people of Portland, Atlanta, Tokyo, Moscow, you know, Beijing, Stockholm. I think I want to use an anecdote. When Health and Harmony was conducting our feasibility assessment in Southeast Madagascar, I wrote to a Malagasy friend and colleague inside of Doctors Without Borders, and I told him what we were doing. I said, you know, I'm with this new, young, amazing organization. We're doing an assessment in your country, in Madagascar. Can you please provide me with some contextual background, some information? And my friend wrote back to me, and he said, Jonathan, I'm so thankful and so sorry that you from the outside have to go to my country and do this for and with my people. And this is very interesting because that colonial or that outside-inside dynamic is something that I think is very common within the last 20 or 30 or more years within the industry. But what I wrote him back was this. I said, look, when it comes to planetary health, there are no insiders and outsiders. We're all in this one we're all in this one boat together, Gail, right? We have one planet. We have one boat. We're all in it together. There are no insiders and outsiders. So to answer your question, I think that the system that we have put together so successfully in Borneo, now this, think of this hospital. This hospital is anchoring not only a healthcare system, but a conservation program and a livelihoods development. In other words, a jobs training program.
Yes.
Now I want to get into a little bit more detail because I think that this system that we've put in place in Borneo should be adopted not only in Jakarta, but in Portland, Toronto, Tokyo, et cetera. If I bear with me, I just want to explain this, what this looks like on the ground in Borneo. I can pay for my health care at our hospital in Borneo with non-cash payments, okay? Those can be tree seedlings, that can be goat manure, it can be handicrafts, or it can be my time. So nobody is denied health care, okay? Those tree seedlings that I pay, let's say my wife has a cesarean section or a treatment for an upper respiratory tract infection, and I pay for that with 500 seedlings from native rainforest species that then Health and Harmony and our Indonesian partner are going to use to reforest, to replant. That's one important element. The other important element here is that we have agreements between, I mentioned there are approximately 40 villages living around the national park. All but one of those villages has a memorandum of understanding, an agreement with a hospital that stipulates the cost of health care at the hospital for the people in that village is directly proportional to the rate of their illegal logging. If they stop illegal logging completely, they appreciate a 70% reduction in the cost of health care at our hospital. Okay, so that is a very structural, this is a very structural example of linking the drivers of ecosystem degradation and planetary health and stopping those drivers through the practice and the administration of human health care, right? That, for me, knows no boundaries. Imagine if you and I could go to our doctor and they were talking to us about not only our tuberculosis and our asthma and our respiratory tract infections, but also in the same sentence, in the same breath, the health of the rainforest that I live in Portland, or the health of your environment in Atlanta. And imagine if the cost of your health care depended on, for example, the amount of driving you did versus bicycling or walking, right? In other words, if the cost of your health care was tiered or weighted against your carbon footprint.
Right. Or my plastics use, or something like that.
Exactly.
Reduction in
plastics. That's the system that has taken hold in the last decade in Borneo. And I don't think that that system is an alien that only exists in low resource settings in the global south. For me, if we don't adopt elements of this thinking in the global north, I think we're going to struggle to put the health of the planet on a trajectory that will allow us to maintain the ecological systems and the biodiversity of life as we know it.
Yes. So you bring up that's a fantastic system and model, and it is applicable in our urban centers, not just in the villages next to the rainforest. And what it makes me, as an economist, wonder is, how are the people in the hospital getting paid, or how is this supporting economically the medical care and then all the other systems in place in that more central, city area or town area? And that's a longer conversation, I know, but do you see what I'm saying?
Oh,
if I come in with goat manure or, yeah.
This is the key question, Gail. And look, in the answering of this question, this is something that Kennery and I and our colleagues at Health and Harmony are working very hard to educate ourselves about. Now, I want to be very clear to you and your listeners. This is a question where very quickly I'm out of my depth in answering it. But here is my answer. I want to draw on a very formative man and a book he wrote in 1993. You might be familiar with a book called The Ecology of Commerce by Paul Hawken. And in that, Paul Hawken, he wrote a book in the last year or two called Drawdown, which you may be familiar with too. But anyway, in The Ecology of Commerce, Paul Hawken basically said, and I'm going to put this very crudely and nowhere near as eloquently as he can and did, if within the capitalist system, if we don't prioritize products that in the making of which and in the use of which do not destroy our environment, but rather regenerate our environment, our ecosystems, and restore our ecosystems. And he called this restorative economy. He says if we do not retool the way we do business, retweak the way we think about business and capitalism so that we're essentially operating in a restorative fashion, then it's going to be very difficult to secure the health of our planetary systems, okay? So that's the foundation on which Health and Harmony is thinking about that question that you just asked about, well, how do you pay the people in the hospital? That is a combination, Gail, of wealth transfer, but also carbon credits and carbon taxes. Now, this is a very politically volatile issue. And I want to make a statement that before I go into the carbon tax, for me, the health of our planet is bigger than any political moment in our history. Okay, so I don't come at this as a Democrat or as a Republican or as an independent or as, a Green Party in the UK. I don't come at this through a political lens. If we don't figure out a way to commoditize or monetize the carbon that we are putting in the atmosphere, but that we are also sequestering in rainforests, for example, in our program in Borneo, if we don't figure out a way to monetize that, then I think we're going to really struggle to put the planet and our atmosphere and the global warming question and the climate change question on a path for positive change. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Yes. And you're getting back to, silo busting and getting into the bigger picture, the blue sky concepts, or green earth concepts, where we really need to start to think in that holistic manner, that one connected manner that Chief Seattle was talking about, versus any political agenda or any other, silo focus. Correct?
Exactly. And I do not want to use sensationalism to quote unquote convert or quote convince people about global warming and climate change. I want to be somehow beside politics, beside the polarized interests, in I believe creating an echo chamber, a community of interest and community of people who really understand that ecologically speaking, we have got to make very significant social changes and behavioral changes, not only in the global south, but also right here at home in the global north.
Yes. So I have a proposition for you. And this goes along with maybe why your organization, healthinharmony.org, for those who are listening in. It was at the AZA conference, the AZA being the Association of Zoos and Aquariums here in the United States, an accredited organization, a member organization with over 230 accredited zoos in North America. And so I see, and this is one of my passions here and why I'm really happy to have you on the Peace Brain Show, is that zoos and aquariums actually are a place where these types of messages can get to the general public, where we can start to make those connections between conservation health, between ecological health, between, you know, endangered species that zoos are helping to preserve on the planet, saving animals from extinction, and connect it to the ecological health, the planetary health, and back to human health. So, okay, that's a huge conversation, I know, and we're getting toward the end of the show, but I would love to see some of these programs or to be able to convince zoo directors, if you will, and zoo boards to start to add these types of programs to what the public views and understands and learns at the educational components when they go to visit their local zoo or aquarium.
Yeah. Well, look, Gail, I couldn't have said it better myself, right? The zoo is the place to make the connections. And so that's why Health and Harmony is embracing the AZA, the Association of Zoos and Aquariums. We are developing strategic partnerships with the Oregon Zoo, a phenomenal zoo right here in Portland, but also with zoos mm-hmm. in New York and New Jersey and zoos around the country, because these zoos are home to sensational ambassadors, the orangutans, the lemurs, the animals that call these zoos their home, and the phenomenal people that caretake within these zoos. These are ambassadors for the conservation efforts that are taking place in situ, in the wild, in the Arctic of Canada, in the rainforests of Madagascar, in the Amazon, in the eastern forests, Appalachian forests, where you live, right? So these animals are sensational ambassadors. And so Health and Harmony is putting together these strategic partnerships with zoos so that the zoo can use our story of success, where we have protected habitat for orangutans. And when we're operational in Madagascar, we'll be protecting precious habitat for lemurs and other amazing species. And the zoo can use our success story to influence their guests about the reality of conservation on the ground. And so we then can also use the zoo's incredible firepower, their incredible knowledge, to educate communities that we work with in Indonesia, and also with the Oregon Zoo, we hope to one day build a two-way educational virtual or digital learning program, so that the planetary health in practice. So we are a laboratory for planetary health in practice in Borneo, and we can bring some of that knowledge and learning to the Oregon Zoo or to zoos all across the country and the world, and then the learning that they have, this amazing reservoir of knowledge that zoos have about the conservation of species and ecosystem management, we can bring that back to the communities that we're working beside in Indonesia and elsewhere. So you're exactly right, and I couldn't have said it better myself.
Well, and also hopefully educate the guests at zoos and aquariums, which the numbers are something like more people attend or visit zoos and aquariums than all the major sporting events combined. So we get these amazing,
oh, wow,
you know, hundreds of millions of visitors each year to the U.S. zoos and aquariums. That we talked about, you know, how do we, as you said, how do we prioritize products that restore our ecosystems? And I know one of them particularly was at the AZA was a bottled water, but it was in aluminum bottles or cans, not plastic. And of course, that's a whole other conversation about the plastic that we use and how it's degrading our oceans and causing terrible, you know, environmental degradation around the world. But we need to start choosing these products that really are based on ecosystem health and planetary health. So the educational availability for those people who do not live next to the rainforest, such as in the urban centers in any of the countries around the world, can really make a difference in the way we see and connect and make our products going forward. So I have to say we're getting to the end of the show. Could you give your last words of wisdom to our listeners then, please?
Well, I want to share with you a quote. And this is a quote that Kinnery and my colleagues, we consult, we accompany clients through the understanding and application of the radical listening methodology. So we offer training programs, not only in radical listening, but also in planetary health and practice. And people who are interested can learn more about that at our website, you know, healthandharmony.org. Mm-hmm. Within the radical listening training, we feature this quote by Margaret Mead, and the quote is this.
Uh-huh.
Truly seeking to know others demands the open-mindedness with which one must look and listen, record in astonishment and wonder that which one would not have been able to guess.
Mm.
So if we are going to, and this is, I really believe this, and Health and Harmony believes this, if we're going to outmaneuver global warming and climate change, we're going to have to listen to one another. We're going to have to prioritize local design, whether that's locally here in Portland, Atlanta, in Sukadana, where we work in Indonesia, if it's in, you know, locally in Juba, South Sudan, the people of a place matter. And listening, real listening, not active listening, radical listening and active listening are obviously related but different. We're going to have to listen to one another. We're going to have to arrive at consensus. And so I think Margaret Mead's quote and words of wisdom are very, very important in taking us towards that future. I would just close with the element, two of the elements that anchor Health and Harmony, our ethos. And the first is urgency. We know that we have got to work very quickly to protect as much rainforest as we possibly can. I mentioned the 100,000 hectare rainforest that we work inside of in Borneo. And I just want to put that in perspective. The amount of carbon sequestered in Gunung Palung National Forest in Borneo, if that forest were to be burnt, which is often the case after it's deforested, the amount of carbon dioxide released in the atmosphere would be the equivalent of about 14 years worth of carbon dioxide release from the city of San Francisco. So,
wow.
We have got to act urgently to protect forest. Photosynthesis is approximately one-third of the answer to mitigating climate change. And photosynthesis is a technology that exists, and we do not have to spend billions of dollars to create it. That's number one. The second thing that I would like to finish with is hope. we are an example of a bright spot. Health and Harmony's work in Indonesia has generated fantastic and remarkable outcomes where human health, ecosystem integrity, and ultimately planetary health are concerned. We're a bright spot. We are absolutely evidence that hope is justified and that hope can exist. And I don't mean faith. I mean hope that is rooted in objectivity and the evidence that there are solutions out there that are working. And so, Gail, that would be my limp towards your demand to have finish with some words of wisdom. It's not as eloquent as you have been or others have been, but I really appreciate the time today and would invite any of your listeners to visit our website and to learn more about us. Thank you so much, Gail.
Oh, thank you, Jonathan, for being on the Peace Brain Show. It's been a delight, and I feel we could have conversations into wee hours of the morning if we wanted to. But
I would love to hear more about you, Gail. Let's do this.
Yeah. No, thanks for coming on the Peace Brain Show. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So you're very welcome. You can find out more about Jonathan Jennings, who's the Executive Director of Health and Harmony, at healthinharmony.org. That's healthinharmony.org. And their work around the planet, helping create healthy people and healthy environments. So let me just say we are getting towards definitely the end of our time. I just want to do a quick Peace Brain meditation that anchors all of us into Mother Earth. So I invite you to close your eyes or not, it's up to you, and connect yourself to Mother Earth. And what I mean by this is give yourself a grounding cord, which is basically a visualization tool. It's an energetic connection from the base of your spine to the center of the planet. And I like to envision a tree trunk coming out of the base of my spine and rooting into Mother Earth, into her iron crystal core. Or maybe you could do a waterfall, or if I'm working with kids, sometimes a monkey's tail. But really feel grounded. Feel grounded. It's like the third prong on the electrical outlet. You know, we are electrical beings, and we get surges of energy, so we need to ground it off into Mother Earth. Just be here. Take a breath. Be here in present moment, in present time. And I invite you to think about how you use the earth. What is your connection to Mother Earth? What kinds of resources are you using from her? And of course, if you live in an urban environment like I do, we have many, many answers to that question. And so I invite you to think about where those resources come from. The choices that we each make, that you're making in the grocery store, in with your driving, with your transportation, with the way that you obtain your food, whether it's from local farmers markets or from halfway around the world, your clothing, everything that really comes into our lives that we use, and then applications of how fortunate you may be to have healthcare that's right around the corner from you, and a good job that provides you with ability to live and provide food for your table with your family. So these resources are important for all of us to be aware and to take a moment and pause and really think about how we're using Mother Earth's resources, from the air we breathe to the water we drink, the food, the clothing, everything about our lives. So take a breath and just be present and know that you can make a difference. You are making a difference, particularly when you start to pay attention and maybe choose to educate yourself more about what organizations like Health and Harmony are doing, or your local zoo or aquarium, how they are helping conservation in various parts of the world where their animal ambassadors are originally from. So take a breath, and I invite you to envision a new world of peace, a new world where We are living in a healthy planet with healthy people, and we all are connected. And that is biologically as well as spiritually, that we do need to listen to each other. We do need to find these local solutions and consult with each other and come up with solutions that are win-win for all. So I invite you to open your eyes, be present, come back to the room. Thank you for tuning into the Peace Brain Show today. If you want to learn more about me, Dr. Gail Lash, you can go to my website, tourismforpeace.com, and check out the services we have there and plant your peace park, you know, make your peace park in your local area that we can then connect around the world into peace trails and get on a world peace trails map. So thank you again for tuning in, and go forth and activate your peace brain and have a beautiful day. Many blessings. Namaste.
Thank you for joining us on the Peace Brain Show. You can find us at tourismforpeace.com. Be sure to check out Dr. Gail's Akashic Records readings, her peace plans for your business or organization, and her recently published book, Opt for Peace, 9 Essential Steps to Achieving Peace, Power, and Prosperity. Tune in to BBS Radio Station 1 every other Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific and 8 p.m. Eastern to the Peace Brain Show for your next installment of wonder, inspiration, and practical peace.